This interview is part of our Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation Career Path Series. We'll be speaking to different physical medicine and rehabilitation practitioners, also called physiatrists, about their career experiences. The American Academy of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation is presenting this series to provide insight into the variety of practice types available in this field. Dr. Sifu is chairman and Herman J. Flax professor of the Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond. His chief of physical medicine and rehabilitation services of the VCU Health System. He is chief of physical medicine and rehabilitation services at the Richmond VA Med Center and national director of PM&R services for the entire Veterans Administration health system nationally. In his 19 years in practice, he's delivered more than 380 lectures, ranging from regional to national. He's also published more than 225 articles, abstracts, and book chapters. He is also a past president of the American Academy of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation.
This is Dr. Matt Baiatolu, and I am with Dr. David Sifu. Thank you for joining us today. Tell me, how'd you get into our field?
Interesting. July 4th, 1981. I was a...
Not too long ago.
Yes, attending summer classes as part of my six-year medical program in Boston. And I was awoken around 9 a.m. by a phone call from a friend of mine, one of my six-year medical school classmates. And she was calling to let me know that one of my classmates had just had an accident while at the Esplanade in Boston mudsliding. And I was supposed to be with him actually mudsliding at the same time, but I unfortunately didn't wake up early enough. And turns out that he had a C5 spinal injury, and to this day is a C5 quad.
Wow.
As a result of that experience, a friend of mine, this occurring, I spent the next 3 months kind of going through rehab with him. And then the next 5 years of my undergraduate and medical school career kind of working with Joe and really kind of seeing what he was going through. And so as a result of his injury, July 4th, 1981, I was exposed to the field of disability care, but then specifically some of the rehabilitation professionals, and absolutely loved it. I just was jazzed by it. Before that, never heard of it, never thought of it, but it was just the right thing for me.
What did you love about it? What drew you to it?
Yeah, I think the most important thing, and what I still value to this day, is the fact that while, you know, there was the whole science thing going on and surgery, and it had the look that you see in TV or movies. More important thing was the physicians and the care workers who were there were acting like normal, that they were treating people like human beings, that they weren't doing the white coat thing, they were regular, and even they were treating the friends of the patient in this case just as regular people. And they kind of got to know us, were very social with us, and really kind of began mentoring us. It was kind of a neat thing. Whereas some of the other areas of medicine at the time seemed a little bit more sterile, and over time I still find that there's that separation between the clinician and the patient, the clinician and the family, which I've never liked and which to this day I don't like.
So in medical school you were interested already at that point, and then you carried on into residency. Where did you do your residency at?
I did my residency at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston.
That's where I did mine too.
Yes. I've heard that. We're alumni. It's fantastic.
And how did you carry on what you had experienced in your personal life into your training?
Yeah, you know, back then in the dark age, I think as you said before we edited this out, PM&R was very, very focused on the neurologic and the inpatient and the more classic disability model. And Baylor was one of the major centers for that. And, you know, I didn't even think twice about, you know, as a career, I was going to care for folks that had neurologic injuries, that had bad disabilities. And so it was a very smooth transition because when I was at Boston, I spent a lot of time with the rehabilitation folks there and really just fell in love with it. I mean, I should add that near the last year of my residency, the whole physical medicine thing became getting big. And I got pretty heavily into that when I was an attending at Baylor after I graduated, just to kind of feel that out. But fortunately, my clearer head stayed on, and I remained in the area of neurologic rehabilitation, although clearly it's been wonderful that the physical medicine piece has blossomed.
So tell me about your career path then. Did you stay on at Baylor for a little bit as an attending?
Yeah, I was at Baylor for a year. We found wonderful jobs in Richmond, Virginia in 1991, and I've been there ever since. I started off doing a general rehabilitation, doing some consults. I was an assistant professor, and then after about 8 years or so, I became the head of the whole rehabilitation programs there. Eventually, the chairman really into neurologic rehabilitation, as I mentioned, specifically brain injury. Got my first research grant in 1992, and I've been doing NIH and NIDAR-funded kind of neurologic rehab research since then.
So you've been very involved in research projects. How did you get into that?
Currently, my research is largely focused in the military brain injury world. I've been very involved with the Veterans Administration rehabilitation program for about the last 3 years, and have, as a result of that, gotten involved with the care of those returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, and have been working with the Department of Defense to look at some innovative ways to improve outcomes for some of our brain injuries, because we're not seeing as good outcomes as we see in the civilian sector. But the way I was able to have a sufficient research platform to allow me to do that and work with the DOD was, you know, back in 1991, 92, when I first joined at Medical College of Virginia in Richmond, I had mentors. I had senior PhDs, a senior MD, who had already been doing some research, largely funded research, but even some unfunded. And they took me under their proverbial wings and really showed me how to write a grant, how to put together an IRB a proposal, how to develop a manuscript into a paper, how to do biostatistical work. I took some courses there, again, with their advice and under their mentorship. And that's really been the key. I didn't just out of the box start writing grants and doing papers. It took me a week. No, it took me a bit of time. And in having some senior folks who really understand how to do it is a lot easier than kind of learning from your own mistakes. So I was able to kind of jumpstart the process. And after about 5-6 years, I had my own research grants and had my research associates who would work with me. And that's one of the keys to writing grants and writing a lot of papers is having residents, students, research associates, PhD co-researchers who can really help to leverage what you do. Because I can write about one paper at a time, but when I've got 10 people working with me, we can write 7, 8, or 9 papers at once, and that really can help one's career and also grow a whole area of research.
People don't typically think of physiatry being a research-laden field. Do you think that there's a lot of opportunities in our field for further research?
Yeah, the most overstated phrase at this academy meeting and at every academy meeting is, we have to do more research in this area. We don't know the answer. You know, I see the evidence-based research lectures, and all they say is there is no evidence-based research, and I don't blame them for that. They're to a large part correct. You know, and so the answer is, of course, we do. Not just because we want to justify what we do and get paid, all right, which is unfortunately a driving force, but also we're scientists. We're folks that are providing care for others, but in a scientific way. We're not just kind of throwing things at them and hoping it sticks. And so I feel that certainly as an academician, I need to push that area of our field so that the private practitioners and other clinicians can kind of know what to use next. All right. And I also, to be fair, gather information from the private practitioners at a meeting like this and understand what it is they're trying. And I say, well, that's interesting. Because a lot of times, you know, just by doing it, you figure out what kind of works well. So then you take that and bring it into the laboratory and study it. So we have to do research. And we have to stop saying we can't study certain things. It's absurd. No other field says that, and so we can't do that. And I see it as one of my missions. I mean, that's what I've got to do.
So do you think if a medical student is interested in doing research, this might be an appropriate field for them?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, you know, the earlier someone starts, the more likely you're really going to understand the excitement of doing it. I mean, it isn't boring. I mean, it certainly can be basic science things, you know, with animal research or theoretical research. But a lot of PM&R research specifically is very exciting clinical trials and interventional kind of work. And it's cool. I mean, it's a great way, by the way, to get into a program. You know, is to do research there or to have it on your resume. But the most important thing is you just get bitten by it. I mean, we at our center, we require all of our residents to do research projects. Almost all of our medical students at the university who are getting into PM&R are doing research with us. And you know, I love working with students, and all of my faculty do very much. So yes, I think the earlier the better, the more you can dive into it.
What are some other advice you would offer to students interested in the field of physiatry?
The biggest thing is you know, if you truly like something in medicine, all right, then that passion, that enjoyment is going to show when you're doing an internship or rotation, you know, I guess they call it an acting internship, or when you're interviewing. So the key, the biggest piece of advice is don't just do it because your buddy told you it was good, or you heard the hours were good, or you said, well, you can make a lot of money and you don't have to wear a tie, as a lot of people seem to be doing these days. But the key is make sure it's your passion. And that means the whole field. That means everything from the interventional musculoskeletal piece to the geriatric piece to the pediatrics to EMGs, really the whole breadth of the field. Because that is the excitement of it. It isn't just one piece, but that's job one. Make sure you love what you're doing. And the other big thing is find some mentors. It doesn't have to be a chair or a senior person. Usually someone who's a couple years out has kind of still got a lot of that fire that he or she can remember from residency or internship. And certainly even residents and interns can be mentors. Find someone or a bunch of folks who can kind of relate to what you're looking at and kind of latch on to them. Obviously, the concept of making sure you're doing a good job when you're with them, you know, I mean, being a slacker doesn't cut it. You know, just being cool isn't enough. You actually have to kind of show up early and do the work and again, show that passion. But step one, make sure it's for you. That's the biggest mistake folks have. And if it is, then just run with it.
Well, you say make sure it's for you. What are some qualities that you think make a good physiatrist?
Yeah. The best thing about the field of PM&R is that it's so diverse. And because it's so diverse, the types of personalities that do well here can be that diverse. They can be the, anybody listening to this, don't take this the wrong way, they can be the frustrated jock, you know, the person who couldn't quite, who couldn't quite make it in the world of sports or wanted to, you know, or always wanted to kind of, you know, do that kind of thing. You know, that there's a big place for that. It can also be the total dweeb kind of person who just wants to do one thing really well and over and be in a little lab or an EMG room or something like that. And that there's a place for that. Now, what I would be looking for, all right, and hopefully someone that would embody perhaps the person speaking right now, is someone who has got a lot of people skills. Someone who is really not afraid to talk to folks, open up with them, you know, give and take type of thing, act beyond just the traditional physician role, something I spoke of earlier, is really to be a regular person. And that can be very difficult when you're faced with people who have pain, who have disabilities, who have bodily deformities. It can be hard to kind of just talk regular to them. Even just talking to someone in a wheelchair can be tough for folks. And that personality piece is absolutely vital.
So tell me, what's your clinical practice like? You do mostly inpatient rehabilitation, is that true?
Yes. I mean, you know, as a chair, a bit of my practice is doing administrative kind of things where I attend meetings with folks in the hospital and stuff. But that's something that I would recommend to anybody. The chair thing is a great gig. But from a clinical standpoint, what my practice is neurologic, largely inpatient. But again, all of my inpatients need outpatient follow-up, so I'll be seeing them as outpatients. So, for example, we typically round for about an hour in the morning from 8 to 9, and then once or twice a week we'll do a two-hour team meeting where you get together with the 10 folks from your team and talk about the 15 people in your service. I always have residents as part of my program, as part of my clinical role, so I typically have a resident in each of my sites. So I've got my 15-bed inpatient, and I've got my outpatient follow-up clinic for these folks as well. And then I do about a half a day of electrodiagnostic studies a day, which is a test where you look at how people's nerves and muscles are working. So I have pretty good diversity, lots of teaching in there. I have research time built into my week. 40 to 50 hours a week is kind of my schedule, which is a nice lifestyle. I enjoy that very much. And call is fairly infrequent, about once every 9 to 10 weeks.
I see.
And so it's a fairly pleasant lifestyle, but again, highly rewarding, which is the key. I don't care if I'm working 100 hours. I'm totally digging what I'm doing.
How's a different inpatient rehab different than, let's say, inpatient hospital setting?
When I first started, inpatient care was a lot more, the patients were a lot more medically stable, tend to be a little bit further out after their disability. They were folks who nowadays would be barely inpatients, maybe for a couple days, and they'll be largely managed as an outpatient or a day program. Now we're getting folks after a stroke, say, who are about 3 days from the stroke, so they typically are fairly medically ill. If they get a medical complication, they're managed on a rehabilitation unit. Folks with a brain injury, we're getting them certainly within the first 4 to 5 days. Again, they're going to have lines coming out of them. They're going to have active medical processes. So you're acting very much like a regular acute care physician, partly surgeon, partly internal medicine doctor, partly neurologist, and that's the coolest thing. You really get to do all of those things. Fortunately, I work in a major medical center, so if I have a person who's very sick and is beyond my skills, or more specifically my resident skills, then we can easily get consultants to help out. But the more you're doing this, the more you find out that you know as much as the consultants, and so you can manage their care. And the consultants help you and really kind of bless what you're doing. But it's a nice feeling to take someone from a point of a devastating neurologic or skeletal injury or a major surgery, a heart transplant, or a limb loss or limb-sparing procedure in the case of cancer, to take them from that point where they're sick, can't get out of bed, 2 to 3 weeks later, they're up moving around, ready for discharge, and then you're following them for the next 3 to 6 months, you're getting them back to their life, productivity, that they're going back to work, that they're going back to having sexual activity, they're going back to being mothers, fathers, and you know, workers. It's fantastic. It's cool.
Now, there's lots of different areas in inpatient rehabilitation. There's traumatic brain injury, strokes, amputee, spinal cord injury. Which one of these do you work with?
From a clinical standpoint, I take care of all of those. I mean, at our we've got two inpatient units that I spend time at, and we take care of all of those diagnoses at both. My main area of research is traumatic brain injury, but I'm taking care of Parkinson's, stroke, spinal cord, other neurologic abnormalities, multiple sclerosis. Some of those more outpatient than inpatient, but I, as you could probably tell from this conversation, I get bored fairly easily, and I need diversity in my practice, and I like to be stimulated and kind of cognitively threatened a little bit by some of my patients, and so I like folks who have challenging and new conditions, and again, when you're at a major medical center or at one of the tertiary VAs, you tend to get the sick, unusually injured folks. So our folks don't have a single diagnosis. You know, very often, their injured part of their body is sometimes the healthiest part because they come in with a heart that wasn't so good, livers that's not working well. So the stroke is giving them a new disability, but you've got a lot of other issues, and I love that. And not everybody does, and that's great because the job opportunities for what I like are limitless. And because of that, it's a great field to be practicing in.
Talk about the job opportunities in your area.
Yeah, you know, for inpatient rehabilitation, whether you are in the private sector, whether you're in a very academic sector, whether you're in the Veterans Administration, there are available jobs. I would dare say in every state today, and we're not talking about a job that you wouldn't want. We're talking about a job that you'd be very interested in taking over and growing. That's the other exciting thing. These inpatient roles, very often they're underdeveloped. They're positions where the hospital or the health system doesn't even understand what rehab does. They just know they've got a unit, it makes some money for them, so we want to hire a doctor for that. Well, if you've got a skill set, you've developed that, when you move to a new site, you know, you've found a new job, say, this looks good, find a new site, within a month or two, you're saying, you know, I see opportunity to grow this practice, not just in volume, but in complexity and different layers. So you offer the whole continuum. You're starting a day program. You're doing some consults in the hospital, which is highly profitable and very intellectually stimulating. You're starting a nursing home program for your patients that can't quite benefit from inpatient. And all of those weren't there before you started. It's fantastic. And we've graduated well over 100 residents from our program since I've been there. And all of them are given the skills to grow. And just about all of them find that. It's sort of like being a pioneer very often. If you go into a site that maybe you always wanted to live, or you got family there, but there isn't a developed program, boom, you go in there, and next thing you know, you're growing a whole practice.
You talk about pioneering, and a lot of ways medical students are concerned about the future. Where do you see our field 20 years from now?
Yeah. The unfortunate thing about the United States and probably the world is that we're eating ourselves into disability. We are under-exercising ourselves into disability. The medical ingenuity of this country is saving lives, but not necessarily saving function or productivity. We unfortunately are going to continue to have wars, and every war has brought on innovation in rehab and limitless new opportunity. So between that and the aging of America, there are jobs everywhere, whether they be inpatient jobs, as I'm speaking of, or if we think of the outpatient musculoskeletal or pain world, folks are getting more and more pain issues with their obesity and their lack of exercise, and as they get older and older. You know, the biggest issue is going to be a funding cycle, although I don't see PM&R being on the end of that line because of what we do. For every dollar you're putting into PM&R, you get back anywhere from $11 to $33, depending on what study you're looking at. So healthcare dollars put into rehabilitation get back value. So I see the future being very bright. All right, you know, again, it's medicine. You've got to want to do it. Don't just do it because there's a job and $1 billion waiting for you. All right, what you're doing, you're going to do it for the right reason. Be good at what you do, and you'll see excellent results. Good outcomes equal good incomes. All right, strive for those good outcomes.
Those are words to live by, it sounds like. Yeah. What do you do outside of medicine? We like to enjoy.
Yeah. I spend most of my time doing podcasts, actually, doing things like this. No, okay. I'm blessed to have a fantastic family. I have a wonderful wife and two daughters. Spend a lot of time with them. I coach my daughter's soccer. We do a lot of hiking together. We do a lot of traveling. I've learned to play guitar in the last 2 years. My family's all musical except me, so I play guitar, and I'm growing in the musical arena, which is kind of cool, too. Love to read. I have a voracious appetite for reading, all of it non-medical. I mean, I read journals and stuff, but I plow through books and absolutely love that. I spend a lot of time with neighbors and friends just socializing. I just totally having a fun time. And you know, as I said before, the field of physical medicine rehab lets you do that. I'm blessed to have a good income. I don't have a very challenging lifestyle in terms of how hard I have to work. I mean, when I'm there, I work like an animal. But when I'm not there, I got plenty of time. I think the last thing is being in the field that I'm in. You see folks with a lot of difficulties, whether it be musculoskeletal pain or neurologic disability. And every day that I'm alive and I get out of that bed, I'm so thankful for all I have, both physically, emotionally, spiritually. And so I enjoy it. I really like to live life to the fullest, as folks say. And I think rehab really gives you that better understanding. So I got plenty of great things on my list right now, and I'm very blessed.
I'm also curious. Nowadays, a lot of residents are doing fellowships. There are fellowships in brain injury, spinal cord injury, pain, pediatrics. What is your advice in that regard?
Yeah, I think that there are a number of very good reasons to do fellowships. From my biased perspective as an academician, the number one reason you should do a fellowship is when you feel you need greater education. Whether that's education on how to do research, education on how to do more complex clinical tasks or interventions, education on how to be an educator, how to be a better teacher. Whether it be in pediatrics or brain injury or interventional care or pain, et cetera. So I think if you're doing it for that reason, because you want to push your knowledge to the next level so you can give back to the field, so you can help patients, so you can do the research, whatever it is, I think that's the right reason. And if you can't get into a fellowship or if it's just not right for you, then when you're an attending or in private practice, get mentors, people who can teach you. I mean, you can learn how to do a lot of these things maybe over the course of years with good mentorship. Back when I was doing my residency, they didn't have a lot of these fellowships, and so wasn't quite as distracted by those. But as I said, I had mentors.
Great. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you for listening to this podcast presented by the American Academy of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation. For more information, visit our website at www.aapmr.org.